Hello, everybody. When registering for this talk, I thought it is a good idea to do it in English to lower the language barrier. But by now, is anybody here not speaking German? Hey, this talk is for you. Okay, I will keep doing it in English. I try my very best. So today is about RFID payment systems. I am Gerhard. On the internet, I'm sometimes called Icarus. I'm a pentester, hacker, researcher, and overall security enthusiast, especially when it comes to hardware or wireless systems. Most of them are in an embedded scenario, so talking Bluetooth smartwatches or stuff like this is very fun for me to analyze. And therefore RFID-based systems as well, because they are most of the time embedded and they have a wireless component to them. So what I want to do in this talk is I want to give a brief disclaimer of what it is about and what not. We will learn some RFID and NFC basics. And then we will go a little bit deeper into two technologies. Why these two? Anybody ever did something with RFID? He or she probably came across those two technologies. They're widely known, well spread, at least one of them it is. And they're known for being broken. So we'll have a closer look at them. And in the end, I want to give some examples, anecdotes, stories, of course, what I said with the title of this talk, the different systems I have analyzed and what I have found over the years at different companies, different vendors, having broken systems for RFID payment. So what is it about? It's about NFC, it's about RFID, it's about hacking, it's about broken technologies. It's, like I said, about sharing stories, lessons learned when I have analyzed systems like these in the past. I'm talking about proprietary systems. It is not credit card or other EMV payment methods. So it's the things you typically see at your company canteen or Mensa or even at universities where you can pay with this, with your student ID card. It is not very complicated hacks or anything like this. The knowledge is way out there in the internet. Everybody is welcome to put some effort into it and he or she will be able to replicate these findings. So first of all, I want to give, like, try to bring closer a general understanding of RFID and NFC so that we all know what we are talking about in this talk. The first thing is RFID. It's more like a collection of technologies. It's a term to describe basically any radio frequency identification systems. So it dates back into the Second World War, where even at the end, some friend or foe detection for planes were RFID. So by wireless signals, you can detect which plane to which it belongs to. When we think about RFID nowadays, most of the time at least, we think about more NFC. We think about passive tags, like the near field component, like credit cards when you put them close to a reader when paying something with them. NFC is more a subset from RFID, and compared to RFID, NFC is not a loosely a collection of standards. It is maintained, so the NFC forum is responsible for the NFC standards and what counts as NFC and what not. And most of the technologies, I think all of the technologies that are NFC are first of all passive. We will learn about that. They are around 13.56 megahertz. And typically, the lower layers of these RFID tags that are used in NFC are from the ISO 14443 or ISO 15693 standard, sometimes Felica. It's a Japanese standard developed by Sony. So to understand that even within NFC, but generally talking about RFID, there are a lot of differences. So if we, for example, I guess some of you or most of you checked into a hotel when you're not from here around, and you got a card to open your room, at least at most hotels, that is the case, you get a card. So far, we don't know much about the system, because getting a card, we don't know what's inside the card. So there are fundamental differences with RFID tags. First of all, there's something like the frequency. NFC tags all operate at the 13.56 megahertz range, but there are other RFID ranges that are well known. For example, the 125 kilohertz range is also common in some systems, especially also passive systems. And another fundamental difference is the power. When we talk about NFC, all the tags are passive, meaning if you have ever looked at your credit card closer or under an X-ray or whatever, you probably notice that there is no battery in that device. At least in most of them, there is none. They're actually cards with batteries inside them. But these passive tags, the power comes from the reader. The reader emits an electromagnetic field, and the card, the antenna of the card is a coil, so different winds of the antenna, so that the electromagnetic field can be used to induct power, and that is the power that drives the chip inside the RFID tag. There are active tags. They're not near field anymore. So if they come with a battery and they used, for example, in forklifts, so that when they approach a door, it already opens even 10 meters away or something like this. So when I have a card, we don't know much, because in that card can be a lot of different technologies. This is really just a small extract. So even with different frequencies, there are a lot of different technologies that could be possibly inside such a tag. Some of them are more widespread, others are not that well known. This is another overview, and it's not even complete. It's just from Wikipedia, the NFC article. So even when we try to standardize all that, at least on the lower layer, that is where you can see the ISO standards coming in. In the upper layers, you can see different products. So even if we know it's an NFC tag and it talks according to the ISO standard, the tag as it is can be different because it's a different product. So there can be different features. For example, some of the tag, they are just memory cards, basically. You can write data to them, you can read data from them, and that's it. Other tags are more advanced. They have password protection, for example. You can only read the data if you provide a password first. So that can be the case too. So there's really, really a lot of different tags. Too many tags for me to discuss them in this talk or possibly in any talk. So when we have a tag, first of all, we need to identify it, and then we have to learn more about the tags, what it provides in terms of security, how it works. We cannot do it for all. So this is why we do it at least for two of them that are really relevant to this talk, because they are, the first one, MiFi Classic, is very, very widespread. At least to my knowledge, it's still the most widespread technology of NFC or RFID to this time. You can find it anywhere, from hotel systems, from opening doors, from paying in your canteen or mensa, from even at vending machines, getting hot showers at some locations. All these solutions are done with MiFi Classic. A lot of them are, at least. Not so well known is Legic Prime. I think the main reason for that is Legic Prime is, I think it was a Switzerland-based company. I'm not 100% sure. And they are more well known in Europe, especially in Germany or Switzerland. So they're not that far out. So in America, I don't think a lot of the RFID hacking community comes across Legic Prime tags. Why these two? I already said, because they're broken, but we want to have a closer look how they're broken and how they actually operate if they're not broken. First of all, a common misconception I see a lot, at least when talking to customers, I ask them, okay, what technology is inside the card? The most common answer is, I don't know. The second common answer is MyFair. And they read somewhere, yeah, MyFair is insecure, maybe we have to test that. So to make this clear, MyFair is a collection. It's a series of chips produced by NXP. And MyFair, as it is, you cannot determine what actually MyFair is with only this word, MyFair. So you have to find out, is it MyFair Classic? Is it MyFair Deathfire? Is it MyFair Ultralight? Is it MyFair Ultralight C? Is it MyFair Plus? Is it MyFair Smart MX? I think, I'm not sure if there is more, but there are a lot of different technologies that are starting with MyFair, and they're all different, at least to some degree. So, first of all, we're talking about MyFair Classic. This is a pretty old technology, I think the end of the 90s. I'm not 100% sure on the date. The actual card is a relatively simple storage card. The storage on that card is divided into sectors and blocks. And you can protect the blocks from reading or writing, and you can do that by using keys. So a common example would be to, let's say, in sector 3, block number 2 is only readable with key A and writable with key B, because there are two keys per sector that we can use to define our permissions, access conditions, they are called for MyFair Classic. But the security of MyFair Classic is broken, and broken since 2007. There's actually a good talk from the Keras Communication Congress on that matter, because somebody actually put the time in and the effort in and analyzed these cards on a deeper level. And on a deeper level, I mean like looking into the chip and how the chip is done, because nobody knows until this point how the actual security of this chip works, and it turns out they built their own crypto. And most of the time that's a recipe for disaster, and it was in that case as well. So they had not a very good crypto algorithm. It's called Crypto1. It has a lot of flaws, and on top of that they used a pseudonym random number generator that's also not very strong. So it was possible to implement attacks that can recover the keys of those cards. Then, because it's very widespread, NXP distributed an update for the card. It's not like updating the card, but newer cards. They called EV1 cards, so MyFair Classic EV1, even a difference to MyFair Classic. So you can see there is really a lot of different technologies going around with that. And they got an updated random number generator, and the attacks from 2007 no longer worked. But still, the crypto algorithm to being backward compatible were still broken. So other researchers found ways to improve the attacks to make them work on newer versions. And they published a paper. The paper is pretty good, pretty well detailed. So the RFID hacking community took that paper and actually implemented it on the Proxmark 3. Proxmark 3, who of you ever heard from the Proxmark 3 device? Okay, a lot of you. Yeah, it's basically the universal RFID hacking tool. It's like the Swiss Army knife for RFID hacking. It is really flexible, and there are a lot of different from these technologies is implemented on this device, and it can do a lot. For example, it can do all the key recovery attacks that are in these papers that the device can do. It can also act as a card, so it can simulate a card. It can really do a lot, and for a lot of different technologies. This is how it could look like when you have a look at the MyFair Classic tag. So what you see is the sectors. And within the sectors, each line represents a block. And the last line of each sector is called sector trailer. And it has the meta information, so the bytes on, I'm not sure if I can So you can see my mouse. Okay, yeah, you can. So the yellow part over here, that's key A, and the other part is key B. Of course, you cannot normally read them, and they just in there when they got cracked. This is where they stored, and the part in the middle, at least most of it, is the access condition. So there's encoded what these keys are used for. The very first line is not changeable. It is hard-coded into a tag. There's also included the unique ID. Every tag has a unique ID. It's a number that represents what tag it is, because RFID, it's radio frequency identification. The easiest part to identify them is by a unique ID. Nowadays, it's for, first of all, most of them were 4 bytes, and this technology was so successful that 4 bytes wasn't enough, so they're no longer unique. Newer cards have 7-byte UIDs. You can go up to 10-byte UIDs within the standard, and it's important to know also, even with that, they're no longer unique in that regard, because this technology is so successful that other Asian Chinese vendors reverse engineered MyFair Classic as a chip and built their own chips, but cheaper, and you no longer know if the UIDs that they put out are unique. And even more, you can get special cards, they're called magic cards for the most of the time, where you can actually change the UID. This is important if you are into cloning a card, because once you got the keys, you can read out everything from the card, and you can program it to a new card, but it will not be a 100% identical clone, because the first block, the vendor block, is not changeable. But with those special card, it is. Or you have a Proxmark 3 that can emulate the card and put whatever in there. For Logic Prime, the story is a little bit different. Well, first, there's something common. Logic, as Logic is, again, just a series, so there's Logic Prime and Logic Advanced. I'm not sure if there are more, but Logic Prime is the old and broken technique. It is not compatible with NFC. So what we saw on this screenshot on the side, this is a screenshot from an Android phone, because most of the technology we're talking about here, especially MyFair Classic, is NFC compatible, at least to some degree. You can use most smartphones to interact with MyFair Classic cards. You cannot do that with Logic Prime, unfortunately, although it's operating at 13.56 megahertz. Then the memory is different again, so this is a completely different technology. The memory is organized in segments. You can format them to different spaces within the card. And then again, what they have in common is the security of them is broken since 2008. And it is even more broken, or it wasn't there in the first place. So what they found out when they researched, it's also a talk from the Congress, you can watch it. What they found out when they had a closer look is that there actually just is no security. It's just security through obscurity. So people were never able to read or write these texts because they didn't understand how they work. But once somebody put the time into them, you can just read the tag. You just have to know how and how to deobfuscate the data. So if you have a card from company A and go over to company B and present it to the reader, why the card does not work at company B is just because the reader of company B realizes this is a card from company A. That's not my company. I will stop reading it. But if you have a device like a Proxmark 3, why stop reading? You can just read and you get the data from that card. So we can do that with a Proxmark 2. I'm not sure about other tools that are good with interfacing with Logic Prime. The Flipper Zero at this point is not. I think there's a GitHub issue often open to, but nobody put the time in to actually find out, first, is it possible with the chip that this device has? And nobody implemented something so far, to my knowledge, at least. This is how the memory of a Logic Prime tag can look. But to make this more interesting for you to get a little closer look, yeah, I want to try some demos. We will look at these different card technologies, and I will try to explain what I normally do when I try to identify a tag like this. So the very first thing I do is a smartphone. Because most of the tags, there are NFC tags. Most of them are. At least the ones we come across in our daily business. If it's NFC, then the smartphone should be able to give me some information, at least about this. And there's a good app, it's called TagInfo. It's by the chip manufacturer NXP that produces MyFair. So it's pretty good to find out information about those cards. And we can try to do that. I have a smartphone here, and I will just play some. I will use the TagInfo app, and I will use some MyFair Classic card. Or at this point, I don't know what this card can do. Let's say that. And it takes quite some while, and it finds some interesting information. It doesn't know what it is for sure. Possibly a clone chip. They do this. Now it's an old card. Maybe it's not even a clone chip, but they cannot find out if it's a genuine tag or not, because these old tags have no way to make this sure. The newer ones, the EV1 cards, the better MyFair Classic EV1 cards, they have actually a signature from the from NXP on them, and you can verify if this is a genuine card. I will take another one. This one is looking better. It says MyFair Classic, and this is why I like this device. It's pretty pretty precise with its output. So you can actually find the actual chip that is in the card. You find the data sheet for it, and you can get more information from the full scan tab where you see the UID, the AD. You can see even if they use keys, so there's a factory key when you buy the card empty, free, new. The factory key is all Fs, and if it's all Fs, it tries to authenticate with all Fs and read out the data, so we just see even some data, other blocks. We were not that successful, so blocks 3, we can see we were not able to read with a default key. Let's try the same with the Ledger card. I put the Ledger card under the app, nothing happens. Well, no wonder, we learned earlier that Ledger Prime is not compatible with smartphones, with NFC. So what we have to do is to find another way to make sure that we know what this card is. So the smartphone does nothing. Do we even know if this is a high frequency or a low frequency card? Cannot be sure at this point. But we can use our smartphone again to determine if it's a high frequency or low frequency card. There's a special device built into your smartphone that is possible, that makes it possible to detect that, and it's called the flashlight. You can shine light through the text, and if you do it to a really high with a good setup, you can actually see how the antenna is within these chips. And high frequency tags, so this is all different high frequency tags. You see the antenna layout. There are not that many winds for the coil. Sometimes you even can count them if it's like printed designs, like the first 3. And if you compare it to low frequency antennas, you can see a difference. Low frequency has way more winds on the coil, and it's much more denser, it's blacker. You can see that even with your smartphone when you look through a card, so you can be pretty sure at this point it's a high frequency or low frequency card. If we do that for Ledger Prime, we will see more something like this. So it's a high frequency card that is not NFC because our smartphone didn't detect anything. Sometimes really evil things happen. I was tricked by them as well. Some manufacturers put even 2 chips inside one card. Some of them are, the first one is obviously a high frequency and a low frequency chip inside the card, but sometimes even for migration phases, they use different chips on the same band that I've seen also. So when you have a Ledger Prime system that is broken and you want to, let's say, update to MyFair Deathfire, a new standard, it's both 13.56 megahertz. So you put both chips in there that the old systems can work as long and until the reader gets upgraded or something like this, and newer readers already can use the more secure technology. Anyways, I can really recommend these gallery. If you haven't noticed, it's NFC RFID gone wild, so you can see a lot of naked RFID stuff there. It's not only text, also disassembled readers or RFID hacking tools, and you can contribute by sending your own photos or images. So okay, back to the Logic Prime tag. So our smartphone does not help. In that case, I will shut it down. We will need our Proxmark for that. I have one here with me. Quickly clear up the mess here. I will put a Logic Prime tag on the Proxmark, and we already know it's a high frequency tag. So if we say HF for high frequency, because Proxmark can do both high frequency and low frequency, the 125 kilohertz, he can also do the device. And we will somewhere here in the supported list that it can actually do Logic. And if I type HF Logic, this is how the menus are built. You will see I have get different options to read the tag or even to just dump the tag. You see there's no operations like cracking keys, key recovery or something, because like I said, there is no such thing in my Logic Prime. So what we can do, if we're not 100% sure that is Logic but a high frequency, we can just use search. The Proxmark tries different technologies that it is aware of, and when some tech answers to that, we see at least the unique ID for Logic Prime, the unique IDs are those 4 bytes. They call them MCD and MSN. I'm not sure what the actual letters mean. I don't remember. So it is Logic Prime. We know with HF Logic we can look at it, and the info command said just read out all the data and deobfuscate it and show it to me, and that is basically what it does. So we are finished with that. Just put that into your terminal, we can see all the data, we can modify all the data also with writing, and nothing more to it. So this is why the technology is broken, because we can just read and write to it without any restrictions. Well, there is a restriction on original card. I cannot change the UID again, like the unique part. So for a perfect clone, it would be great to at least emulate such a card. And if we go back into the Logic menu, you see there is a sim command that can actually simulate these tags, so we can do that. So we can, cloning is always an option. We can do the same for MyFair Classic. For MyFair Classic, now we know it is MyFair Classic, but we don't know all the keys, so we cannot read all the data. So we have to do key recovery. And the key recovery, there are a lot of different methods available. There are different attacks for that, or just simple things like brute forcing, or more efficiently checking a word list with well-known keys, because a lot of the keys are already well-known, and these tools come with pretty big word lists of well-known keys. Even so, well-known side story, the hotel I checked in, I got a MyFair Classic card to open my door, and I put it on the reader, and the keys are already in the library, so they're well-known, nothing to crack there. So, but for this card, we don't know, and we don't know what this card is. I mean, we can have a closer look. I think it was info, or even, info shows it is an old card. It already has the weak random number generator, so I can try even the old attacks, and I can try them manually and crack key by key by key, but this is rather exhausting. So there's this command, helps a lot. It just tries every strategy like word lists, and it found the well-known keys, and it used the nested attack. We can see that it's already finished, cracked all the keys. Of course, a lot of the keys were the ones from the dictionary. That's why it shows a D here. But these keys were not at least in the small dictionary, and that it uses the nested attack to get the keys. Now we can read everything, but we don't even have to because the command already does that for me. It's not only recovering the key, it's just reading out the full card and dumping it for me as well. So HFMF view, I think it was. Oh, yeah, okay. We can have a look now at the full memory with everything is in there. Well, it isn't something in there. It's an empty card with just some changed key. But this is how it works normally. And if you have, let's say, so this will be the first system we will look at in a second. It's an old student card. So it's a student ID card that you get from your university or college. And for this we see it is not able to find a key from the word list, and it runs the dark side attack. It's an attack. They have all cool names. It's an attack that is able to recover one key if no key is known, but it's not very effective. So when it has one key, it switches to the nested attack. But the nested attack requires that at least one key is known. And it found one key, and now it's cracking all the different other keys. It will take, I don't know, maybe a minute. You can wait for it and see. The newer hardened cards with the better random number generator will take longer, but we're still talking about minutes or maybe even half an hour, but normally that is when you got all the keys from such a card. So there's no way to actually make it secure. The newer ones, the dark side attack doesn't work, so you have to know at least one key to make this work. But that's most of the time not that hard, and even if you don't know one key, you can attack the reader. Even the flipper zero can that. You can present the flipper zero to it, and the authentication tries from the reader. You can put them into a cracking tool and will crack one key, the key that the reader tried to authenticate against your fake card, and then you can use the known key to crack the rest of them. So this is possible. It's no magic. It is magic, probably, for me at least it is, but I don't have to understand, so these tools have them all implemented. So now we have a complete dump of the student ID card. So now to the fun part. I want to tell you some stories about broken systems I've seen when analyzing different systems from vendors and companies that I did penetration tests for, but sometimes also in my free time. There will be no like company names or detailed instructions. You saw it, it's pretty easy to crack these cards after all, but it's important. Most of it is fraud if you get drinks for free or something, or increases your balance on these cards, so don't do that without any consent. So the old one is a student ID card. Nearly all student ID cards in Germany are from one company, at least that was the case some years ago. They were MIFA Classic based, they are no longer in most cases. They are MIFA Deathfire now, and you no longer can crack them. MIFA Deathfire, at least to my knowledge, is secure. Not all of them is, and I think KIT here, I'm not sure if they upgraded, but they don't use the system of this company, so it's a different story for them anyways. The money is stored just in value blocks, and there is some simple checksum you have to find out to manipulate data on that card, but long story short, the balance that is on the card, let's say 10 euros, is not synced or paired or compared live when you're shopping. So if you say you spent the 10 euros, there is 0 euros on the card, and you say, okay, I write in this value block, I have 10 euros, you can actually buy something for 10 euros because the syncing with the backend system will be later in case, I guess, for most of the time it's for when the network has some downtime issues, so the cards will still work, but sometimes the syncing is just too late and you will be able to shop. I did a talk on that a long time ago with more details about the student card, how it works, where the different information is stored, and you can still find it online. long story short, yes, you could get free drinks. I wasn't able to because my university didn't allow me to try it, but another researcher at the same time had the same findings and he got consent and was able to try it, and it did work. What I got consent for is trying the access system, and yes, I was able to access every door on the campus. Once I assigned myself a number of a professor or janitor that is able to go in every room. Another interesting system, it is interesting because it's popular. I saw it in many companies. I think you can get it with different technologies. The one I saw was Logic Prime. Of course, now we know already that it is at least to some degree broken because Logic Prime is not secure. And when I did some shopping, I also noticed that the comparison against the back-end systems was not live or not fast enough. And even for that system, I found some vending machines that are offline anyways, where you can get some snacks, chocolate bars, or whatever. And since they are not online, they have to trust the balance that is on the card. And since it's Logic Prime, we can read or write any data to that card. So I did exactly that. Slightly increased my card and was ready for shopping. Well, I didn't shop that much, but the customer said, please leave me the card there. I need this for demonstration purposes to my executives. I'm not sure what he ever did with that card. Another interesting one, it's again a Logic Prime-based systems that I had. It wasn't as easy in the first place because there was a checksum involved and I wasn't really familiar with these checksums. Turns out most of the Logic Prime systems, when they have a checksum, a one-byte checksum, it's just a Logic CRC8. It's a well-known algorithm. The Proxmark already has it. So the only important thing you have to find out is how, like, what data is part of the CRC. So you can write a small script. In that case, all the data I put there were part of the CRC. And if you update the CRC alongside with your manipulation, you can manipulate any data at will again. And of course, it was also able to create a card with a high balance once we can write everything. But this system had another really interesting twist to it. Even better, I was able to program the card to a cost center, Kostenstelle. So this was the point for infinite money glitch. So what I can just say, whatever I buy with this card at the end of the month, this goes into the budget of this department. There's no amount on the card, it never runs empty. I'm not sure, I didn't try to buy too much with it, but it worked. Only for demonstration, and the customer allowed me to, so should be fine. Another interesting one approach, I think it's so clear that you sometimes don't think about it, is the don't care approach, I call it. It was a MyFair Classic-based system at the customers, but I didn't have the time to actually look closer. Of course, I had the time to crack the keys, but it's a thing of minutes. But understanding if there are checksum, where's the money stored, in what format is the money stored on that card, I didn't have any idea. What I did, I just put 50 euros on the card. I read out the card because I know the keys, made a backup of the card. Then I spent all the money. Then I restored the backup, and then I spent all the money, and then I restored the backup, and then I spent. So even if we don't understand what is on that card, and even if there are checksums, well, they're always valid if I know, well, use a valid backup file. And if the system, again, the system didn't check with the back-end systems that my balance is correct, so this worked as well. This one was really interesting because it's not only about free food. So it was a MyFair Classic system, broken again. And as a guest, you can go to this company and say, okay, I'm only here for 2 days. I want to have a guest card, and you can go to a vending machine and it will give you a guest card. And you can say, I want to load 5 euros on that guest card. And you do that with your EC card. You put it into a reader as well, and it will withdraw the money and put it on the company card. And once your visit is over, and let's say you only spend 3 euros from that 5 euros, you have 2 euros left on the card, and you go back to the terminal, put in the card, put in your EC card, and says, please give me my money back, the 2 euros that are still on the card, and put it on my account that is linked to the EC card. And again, the backend system didn't really compare that, or at least it didn't do any error, because that customer was nice enough to have me give me a closer look into the backend system. You have to read that from bottom to top. So I was there, I put in an EC card, you can see it has 0 euros on there, I put 5 euros on there, and then there's 5 euros on the card. I spent different amounts until I have only 60 cents left on the card. And you can see in the next line, it says there are 95 cents on the card. So what I did, I just restored the line before where there were still 95 cents. Then I put it into the machine and said, please give me back my money. I want to have that on my account again. And yes, it actually worked. I got the money back. So it should only give me 60 cents because only 60 cents is the money that I still have, but it did give me 95 cents. So it's a small amount, but was enough as a proof of concept. And after that, I just did some testing more with spending more money I didn't have at that point. But interesting enough for this system, this can actually make your money. So I can put 1 euro on there and then change the value to 100 euros and then go to the machine and say, give me back my 100 euros. So it actually is printing you money. And maybe at some point the financial department finds that out and sees that. And the last thing?
I think at one university they actually give cashback, so I think I saw another talk and they said it felt a little bit like Las Vegas when they actually
It is, yeah. There is a talk milking the digital cash cow, and it's a talk about the student ID card, and they had a department like this also. So if you're a student only for one semester at this university, you can give your card back and you get your money back. This was exactly the same. You can put money on the card that wasn't there and you get the money, yeah. And the last one that I'm finished is an Irish pub gift card at an Irish pub, so no longer a company. So it was an Irish pub, and a friend of mine got a gift card, and he said, look at this gift card, I can buy us beer, and we can just put it on the gift card, there are 10 euros on that card, it's fine. And the gift card was just a MiFi Classic card. I was interested, okay, how does this work? And we had a closer look, and of course, the points of sales system terminal did not track the amount. So we found out where the amount is stored, we manipulated the amount, and we found out, of course, you can put more money on the gift card that actually is there, and the points of sales terminal don't recognize the gift card and the amount that was initially put into the account, and you can get free drinks and all you can eat at this point. Of course, important lessons with all of this. Going to the last point on that slide, we talked to the Irish pub owner also in that case. We give back the money from the beer we bought for free. We informed him and we also informed the vendor of the points of sale systems. So that is always a good idea. Be responsible, get consent when you're doing this, because sometimes it's way too easy, and if you mess up, there might be consequences. I'm pretty sure there are. For me, there wasn't, because I asked before and I recommend to do the same. But to sum up, everything you saw in this talk is just don't use old and broken RFID technologies. And the other one is, if you do, at least have a back-end system that keeps track of everything, informs you if a balance is not correct and doesn't allow a payment if a balance is not correct, at least for the most cases. In the better world, just get a better RFID system that is not vulnerable to these attacks, and that will help. So that's it. I'm ready for questions if there are any.
So, thank you very much, and we would start with questions.
Thanks for your talk. I have a question. What device do you use to read and give something on that card?
Okay, you can do it with a lot of different devices. The device I use the most is the Proxmark 3. This is one of them. Proxmark 3 is open source, open hardware. So you can build yourself, but there are a lot of vendors selling it. The best one is the RDV4 variant of that. It's the most professional one, has good antennas and everything built into it, but it's more expensive, of course. If you want to just get yourself a Proxmark and try RFID hacking, you get there's a version that's called Proxmark 3 Easy, and you get that on Amazon or AliExpress for about 50 euros, and it can all these attacks. It can crack the keys, and you can also use it. So this device is also a reader, a programmer. You can change anything with that if you know how. That's the interface I just showed. When I typed in the commands, that was the interface of the Proxmark 3, and you can do it with that, or you can just buy a 20 or 30 euro RFID reader, and some of them are compatible with some hacking tools. They are all part of, let's say, a Kali Linux distribution, and you can use a normal RFID reader to do the same attacks on MiFi Classic, at least, as the Proxmark does to some degree. Sometimes not that effective, but you can actually use a normal RFID reader for some of these attacks or most of these attacks. It's mostly part of the software and how you can control the reader, because the attacks, some of the attacks at least, depends on timing, and you have to control the reader fields and the timings for that. So it's not possible with your phone, for example. You cannot crack MiFi Classic keys so far. It's just word lists that get checked. But with other readers or Proxmark 3, you can crack the keys and read and write everything you want.
So forgive me if you already answered the question in the talk, but is the Proxmark 3 able to do like interception of the communication? So when two devices are communicating, you can put it in between and maybe you have a Wireshark detector for what's happening there?
Actually, yes, it can do that as well. We didn't have it in the talk, so didn't answer it. But yes, this device can also be used for debugging purposes or understanding RFID protocols better, especially if you have a protocol that you don't know yet. You can put it into sniffing mode, at least for the different frequency bands it supports, and you can listen in on the communications a little bit like a software-defined radio, because it has an FPGA on there. And you can look at the protocols. And if it's a well-known protocol, if, for example, for MiFi Classic, we are able to look at every data that is exchanged and how it's exchanged. We can all see that within the Proxmark client. I'm not sure if there's a, like a dissector or output option to put it into a PCAP, but the visualization options of the Proxmark client are pretty good with annotations and everything if it's a known technology.
Thanks.
Another question here. Mm-hmm. Do you happen to know anything about cards for banking applications? In particular, known vulnerabilities, the sorts of you have presented?
No, I'm not that familiar with normal cards. I know there are some stuff you can do, especially when it comes to, I think, Google Pay or Apple Pay or something in that regard, when your phone acts as a credit card. But if I tell you something, I would probably tell it wrong. I know there are some tokens, and if you get pre-recorded tokens, you can sometimes do some, buying, but I'm not 100% sure how it worked. I haven't looked at into credit cards or stuff like this further, but to some degree, it's better. Of course, the chip in credit cards is way, way, way more advanced, but then again, this technology of credit cards is backwards compatible with really old and broken technology again. So you can actually use your phone, put it on a credit card, and read out the credit card information. So the name, the I think even how long the expiry date, the credit card number, not the secret PIN on the backside, but enough information to do bad stuff with that. But there are apps for that in the Android store. Just download them and try it on your credit card. That is possible. But spoofing a card like this, or especially cloning a card like this, I'm not sure. I never heard that this is fully possible, because you have to read out the full card, and these cards actually work with real crypto, like private public key cryptography on a higher level. So they should be fairly secure. Of course, there can be implementation issues, because these cards are full computers. There's actually Java running on them, on most of them. Java applets, you program really applets onto the card, and there's a computer running these applets on that card. and even an operating system. And a standard for sorry.
At the end of the talk, you said to use secure RFID systems. Are there any RFID cards, not like the smart cards in banking, but just RFID tags, that cannot be cloned or that use stronger cryptography, for example, so that only an authenticated payment terminal can write their data or read their data?
Yeah, at least to my knowledge, nowadays there are some. For example, the MyFair Deathfire technology is pretty much widely used nowadays, because until now it is not hacked or cracked in any case. Well, in any case, there are four generations by now. The very first one, then the EV1, EV2, and EV3. And the very first one, there are some attacks on that, but on EV1, and even EV1 is, I think, from 2008 or something like this, and until now I don't know of any attack that makes it possible to crack the card and read data you're not supposed to read. Partially because they use better crypto now, like the EV1 cards, you can configure them to actually use AES as a cryptographic standard and for authentication purposes as well, so they should be better. I'm not sure how long or if somebody has to have a closer look, but for now, I don't know of any attack that will break the security of these cards, but you can configure them wrong. So if you configure them wrong, you can, for example, say there is a file on that card that everybody can read or write. If you do that, of course, it's up to you.
I remember there was some funny thing, I think it happened around 10 years ago at RWTH Aachen University, where they gave out a new shiny, cool identity card, and they needed to exchange for 30,000 cards because I think somebody forgot to set the keys for it. Now I'm not sure about the details anymore. It gets notified because some student, I think computer science or physics department, said, oh, I have a RFID reader at home, I will try to look up what encryption they are using. Yep. Oh, they don't use any encryption. Now my question, do you maybe know which of the standards, which way they use? Because I now suspect something like my fair Deathfire,
but probably
disabled
is
encryption, but I'm not quite sure about the details anymore, so I want to ask.
Yeah. I'm not sure about that details either. It's not a case I remember, at least from top of my head, but there's a good chance it is my fair Deathfire, because nearly everybody who changed from MyFair Deathfire or some broken technology got onto MyFair Deathfire. And yes, some of them did make some mistakes, because then again, these cards come with default keys. If you don't change them, they're still default keys. And if their keys get well known, again, the Proxmark can do a dictionary attack and try those keys. So even a good card cannot prevent that. So probably this is what happened there. I'm not 100% sure.
Hello. Yes, in the Netherlands they had the MyFair system also used for their OVID chip card, and it was cracked in 2000, as you said. And now they're using a system from Infineon. Do you know anything about that system? Because it's a really massive system. It's probably one of the biggest in the world.
Yeah, I know that the card did use MyFair Classic, and that's why they upgraded, because you can ride the train for free. You can do that in a lot of cities still to this day, so a lot of public transport systems use MyFair Classic as well. You can ride the train for free. You sometimes just Google it, you'll find some information on that, people putting out what the keys are, and they most of the time they're publicly known to this point. I'm not sure what they did in the Netherlands. I would assume, again, they changed to MyFair Deathfire or something like this, or to actual chip cards.
No, they changed to a system by Infineon. I don't
know. I mean, Infineon was the original designer for MyFair after NXP bought it. Yeah, well, okay. MyFair was originally by Infineon. Then NXP bought it. I'm not sure if they're still involved with that or if it's a different system. And again, Infineon does a lot of security chips, so probably it's something like this, because even the chips in your SIM card or credit cards can be chips like these. Maybe they have a full-featured smart card that has more functionality. Then we come again into the category of Java cards that have operating systems and you can write different plugins. That could be possible for that tech. I haven't had a closer look I don't have a card like this, I think, lying around.
So we still have time for questions. Oh, I don't see any questions anymore. So thank you very much for that talk, and I wish you... Ah, no? Question.
Oh. One last one, okay.
It's not really a question, but you said check against the database. Mm-hmm. If universities or universities starting did, change the amount of money of someone you do not like.
Yeah.
And he gets in a lot of trouble. So I think it's not really a fix. It's more...
No, it's only a partial fix until things got really better. So this is why the first point on the slide was actually change your RFID technology. Online, like back-end systems are also a good idea, but yes, you can still do, even if you only use the card to identify the person and have all the money not stored on the card so that it cannot be manipulated, the system is still flawed, as you correctly identified, because what I can do, even if I'm not sure, not that I want to encourage that, but if you're not sure if your attack on the money works, you can also change the unique ID, you can also change the matricule number, like the personal identification number on the card, put it to the number of the professor you never liked and that give you bad grades. And if the point of sale system says, okay, this is fraud, somebody is stealing money, something, they will identify from the card that this was the owner of the card. And it was not, because you can do, even with especially with simulation, you can simulate everything, the unique IDs and other data on that card. So it will not help against these kinds of fraud. Yeah. Signing the data cryptographically makes it a little bit harder, but then again, copying is still possible then.
So I would say thank you very much for this talk, and I wish you all a nice day.
Thank you.
And